Chapter 29. Well before the two X-Wings reached Tilden, Karatooine's smaller and more desolate moon, the enemy starfighters overtook them. First, they were distant blips on the sensor board, moving along the flight path of the X-Wings, mere hundreds of kilometers behind. Then they crept near enough for the sensors to identify them by class. Finally, they were close enough, only a few clicks back, that the Astromech's visual sensors could capture images to show Miri and Vort. Miri glanced at the image on her screen. The starfighter creeping up behind her looked very much like what would result if an X-Wing with strike foils open in attack position mysteriously lost its top two foils. What was left was a nose assembly and fuselage very much like an X-Wing's, with only two wings in an open and down-locked position. It was an E-Wing. It was painted brown and had a distinctive set of stylized triangular teeth painted across the nose in white. Pretending she had just noticed her follower for the first time, Miri clicked her comm board. "Hey, sweetheart, it looks like we have company." Vort's implant voice responded. His Gamorrean grunts were not audible beneath it.
"We could use some recordings of our practice runs. Let's ask them if they'll help."
Then Miri's comm board popped, and a male voice, louder than Vort's, only because the other pilot was almost bellowing, came across it.
"Unknown flight approaching Tilden. Identify yourself at once."
"Unknown?"
Miri let her voice climb into an angry squeak.
"We filed a flight plan with Rimsaw Station and Kura City Flight Control, and we had to fill out different forms for each one."
"But you didn't file with us. I say again, identify yourself. We have a lock on you."
It was true. Miri's sensor board showed that her pursuer had a sensor lock, suitable to launch either laser or missile attack on her X-Wing. Vort was next, sounding ridiculously meek.
"Maybe we'd better do what they say, dear."
"Oh, all right, bully."
Miri switched to internal comm and spoke to her R2 unit, a flaking gray thing barely brought back to functionality by Trey.
"Fuzzy, transmit packet 1 to Sith for brains back there."
Then she switched back to a broadcast channel and her sweeter voice.
"I'm Rima Farstar, and the fellow behind me in the silly costume is Matron Farstar, and we're doing some practice runs on your moon for a holodrama I intend to make when the rest of the backers give me the money they promised but haven't yet transferred. We've been here for days and days, but the money still isn't here yet. My actors are bored."
"Say again, did you say costume?"
"Did I? Oh, yes. Matron's costume. He can barely see out of the head. He's going to crash into the side of a crater because he can't see, I swear."
"Maintain your course and speed. I'm coming up for a visual."
Miri smiled.
"A visual what?" "Visual is an adjective, you know. It can't just float around by itself like an asteroid. It needs a, what do you call it? A noun. I know this because I had to learn all about adjectives and nouns so I could write the script."
"Maintain calm silence."
Miri suspected that the pilot wanted to add, "or I'll kill you," but that would not have been a suitable threat. It might be recorded and presented at a complaint hearing. Apparently, even a pop dog knew better than to utter it. The lead E-Wing rapidly closed the distance between the two flights. It came up behind Vort's X-Wing, positioning itself behind and above in classic dogfight laser attack position. It maintained that position for about 30 seconds, then accelerated and repeated the process with Miri. She loosened her seat restraints, twisted around so she could look back at the E-Wing pilot, waved, and blew him a kiss.
"Rima Farstar,"
the pilot sounded pained.
"Confirm that there is a Gamorrean piloting the second X-Wing?"
"I don't have to maintain calm silence anymore?"
"No, confirm. Species of your wingmate."
"Oh, he's human. That's his costume. I'm surprised I forgot to mention his costume. He can barely see out through the eye holes in the mask, you know."
Miri faced forward again and tightened her straps.
"It's a heavy, sweaty, gross costume. Don't you know the legend of the flying pig? That's also the name of my script."
"Negative."
"Negative? Ooh, I love that word. I'll have to use it. No, this was from a long, long time ago. In a war against the Empire. People started seeing a Gamorrean pilot. What a great story. So I thought, this needs to be a holodrama. Or a holocomedy. I'm still not sure which. I've written it both ways. What do you think?
You're clear to continue.
The E-Wing abruptly banked, a hard maneuver for such a peaceful situation. His wingmate banked to join him on the return flight to Karatooine. Miri watched them depart, her smile replaced by a hard stare. She switched her comm board to transmit on very low power, on a little used frequency, encrypted.
Did you hear all that? They have no jurisdiction in this area. It's a Starfighter Command issue. They didn't even identify themselves. They had no right. They are rodents, just like they're named for.
Keep your mind on the exercise, gambler.
Vort's voice was now matter of fact.
I just want to smash them. They shouldn't have licenses to pilot a hovering snack stand.
Tilden was entirely devoid of other spacecraft when they arrived. There was a sensor station on the side facing Karatooine, but at Vort's direction, Miri led the way to the far side. It was half in shadow and half in sunlight. Vort chose a stretch of lunar surface several hundred kilometers long in the sunlight.
This exercise will be all-terrain following mode. We're going to need to be very good at that for the Skifter Station run.
And what do I get if I'm better than you?
Enough cute talk, gambler. This is deadly serious.
Miri sobered.
Yes, sir.
But good work scamming those pop dogs.
Thank you, sir.
Planetside, on a low, hard rock mountain at the western edge of where Chakum Base bordered on Kura City's south end, two pop dog troopers, one human and one Quarren, both female, examined the small hypercom antenna inset into a patch of stony, treeless ground. The antenna, a durasteel mesh bowl 10 meters across, was now decorated with a fallen tree. Small by the standards of the forest verge surrounding the antenna, this tree had evidently been uprooted by one stiff wind too many. The dead tree lay half in, half out of the depression. A maintenance droid, barely waist-high to a human, its head a round vertical plate with a single optical sensor, lay under the tree trunk just where it touched the stone rim around the antenna. Pinned, the droid flailed, its metal arms clanking against the stone. A series of musical notes that might have been pleas for help or droid curses emerged from its vocal synthesizer. The Quarren trooper laughed. The sound filtered through the nest of tentacles over her mouth was muted and rubbery.
That explains the interference.
The human trooper shook her head, clearly saddened by the futility of dealing with droids. She stooped, getting her arms under the tree trunk, and lifted. The tree rose only half a meter, but the droid was able to scramble free. He stood, pointed accusingly at the tree, and continued his harangue. The Quarren gestured to catch the droid's attention.
What happened?
The droid put his hands where his hips would be on a human and turned his harangue on the Quarren.
What do you mean you don't know?
She asked. The human assumed an expression of disbelief.
What does he mean he doesn't know?
The Quarren shrugged.
He says he was headed up here from the droid access tunnel. He was still 50 or 60 meters down slope when he experienced an emergency shutdown. He woke up under the tree.
The human rolled her eyes.
Here's what probably happened. He came up here, the tree fell on him, and he reinitialized. When he was online again, his memories were cross-linked or corrupted.
That's probably it.
Come on, give me a hand. The tree's still too heavy for the droid.
Together, they dragged the tree completely clear of the antenna depression. Throughout, the droid offered counterproductive advice and complaints about the trooper's interpretation of events. Then the pop dogs left, the droid stomping along behind them, all three crushing fallen leaves underfoot with the stealth and grace of drunken banthas. 2 minutes passed. Then Jesmyn stood.
letting the synth cloth blanket and the leaves spread across it slip to the ground. Huhuna, beside her, also rose. She offered a single word. The word was onomatopoeia, the wookie sound of someone falling through a succession of tree branches before hitting the ground, hence a klutz. Jesmyn, whose own command of wookie was pretty good, grinned and responded in the same language.
Yes, kind of like listening to a construction droid learning to tiptoe. But you were right.
Huhuna's words echoing softly off tree trunks would sound to most people like a distant animal growl of warning. Jesmyn nodded.
Abandoned mines closed for safety reasons don't usually have hypercoms, droid workers, or popdog guards. This is the place.
She looked northeast. Through the trees, some of Kura City's few sky towers could be glimpsed in the distance.
Over there somewhere will be the old entrance to the mine. Probably not as sealed off as people think.
She turned to the southeast. Chakum Base lay in that direction, though it could not be seen for the trees.
And I'm betting there's another entrance down there.
Huhuna rumbled her reply. Let's finish this operation and get off this world of spindly little trees.
They're not that spindly. Come on.